Today we are going to talk about the heart, but not the organ that pumps blood in your chest and throughout your body. We're going to talk about the heart the way that the Bible mostly speaks about the heart, and that is reference to our inner person. When we think about the heart, really what we're talking about is that place where our emotional person, our mental person, not our brain, but our mental person, where our soulish person is seated. It's that place where we are willful and we are thoughtful and we are soulful. That's our heart. Sometimes we think about our heart as being like our truest, most inner self. It's the place where we make our deepest connections. That's where, you know, if you've got a really, really close friend, you are heart to heart. That's where we experience, kind of being moved when we go to a movie or we hear music or a story. There's something in the heart that gets moved. It's that deep, deep inner place in us. In fact, the heart is where we can sense God's presence. There's just something about us that is real. It's hard to point to where the heart is because it's spiritual and it's squishy, but it's there. And so today what we're going to focus in on is how to talk to people on a heart-to-heart level. In fact, we're going to talk about how to speak to a person's heart, how to speak into their heart. If you've got your Bible, I want you to open with me to Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24, as we dive into this idea of speaking to the heart. Luke 24, we'll start reading in verse 13 here in just a moment. Now, if you are new to Turning Point, we are in a teaching series where we are taking a very close look at the life of Jesus. We started back during the Christmas time. We're going all the way through Easter, and we're doing everything that we can to look at Jesus in a very close manner so that we can learn as his followers how we can follow in Jesus' footsteps. If we're followers of Jesus, we're expected to follow Jesus. That means we're learning about his life, his rhythms. What did he care about? What were his values? What were his priorities? How did he do his ministry? We're taking all of that in with the fact that we want to think like Jesus, we want to live like Jesus, we want to do what Jesus did. Now, we have broken down Jesus' life over seasons. Right now, we are in season 3, which covers his ministry years. And as we're looking at Jesus' ministry years, we are now dialed into the fact that Jesus was a teacher. Last week, we looked at one aspect of Jesus' teaching that was different than all the other teachers of Jesus' day, and that is his teaching was authoritative. And we learned how we can actually add some weight to our voice, and we can be more authoritative, and God can use our words, and he can use what we say and what we do for great influence in people's lives. Today, what we're going to look at is Jesus as a teacher, but we're going to see how Jesus had this ability to speak to people's hearts, how he could make a connection with people's heart. In fact, if you just kind of think back over Jesus' life and ministry, he had this incredible, unique ability as a communicator, as a teacher, to just kind of go heart to heart with people. Think about as Jesus one day was at a well, and somebody comes up to draw water. And within minutes, Jesus is having this deep, meaningful conversation with this person over some of the most important thirst in life. It's connection. Or think about how Jesus, with one of his closest followers, this was a follower who had failed his faithfulness exam not once, not twice, but 3 times. And Jesus leaned in to go heart to heart with that disciple. And he said 3 times, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" And Peter lifted up his humbled face and said, "Lord, you know I love you." That's connection. Or there was an old man who one day asked Jesus, hey, I want to get into the kingdom of heaven. What do I need to do in order to get into the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus looked at that crusty old teacher and said to him, well, you know what? You got to be born again. And that guy had to lean back and go, what? How in the world can an old man be born again? And all of a sudden, Jesus had struck a nerve. And he was going heart to heart with Nicodemus. Jesus just had this remarkable way of being able to speak into the heart. And listen, this is a vital, vital expression of life that we need to pick up. Because we've got to learn how to make a connection, a meaningful connection with people. If you are a parent in the room, it is so important that we learn how to go after the heart of our child and that we speak to the heart of our child. That's even more important than the lessons that we want to give them. Or if you're married, you want to be able to speak to the heart of your spouse in a way that connects you in a deeper way, even than just being, you know, being faithful in your vows. That's so important. But you want it to be more than just faithful, man. You want to link up heart to heart, soul to soul with your spouse. And so we've got to learn how to speak to the heart. Did you ever have a teacher that just somehow knew the combination of your heart, and all of a sudden maybe you were resistant to every other teacher, but that teacher unlocked your heart and started speaking to you in a way where you all of a sudden, now you started being a good student. Other classes, you struggle, but in that class, you got it because they knew how to speak to your heart. Today we want to learn from Jesus, the master communicator, how to speak to the heart. Look at Luke 24, beginning in verse 13. It says, that same day, we're talking about Resurrection Sunday. So this is the day that Jesus was raised from the dead. There were two of Jesus' followers walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. And as they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. The word play here is like when two people are playing catch and it's going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's the way they're talking. It's intense as they're processing what just happened. It says in verse 15, as they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them, but God kept them from recognizing him. The tense is passive. Theologians often call this the divine passive because God did something that caused them to not be able to recognize Jesus. Now, how did he do that? Like a Jedi mind trick?
Let me see your identification.
You don't need to see his identification.
We don't need to see his identification.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for.
First service, somebody actually applauded. Star Wars in church! How did that happen? How the divine passive? How did God? We don't know, but they were not able to recognize him. Verse 17. He asked him, what are you discussing so intently as you walk along? They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Another way to say this, they just stopped in their tracks and went, as they were just so sad over the events. Now, even though we're going to learn that they knew about the report of the resurrection, they didn't know how to process all of this. So we keep reading. Cleopas replied, you must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days. Verse 19, what things, Jesus asked. Now, next week, what we're going to talk about is we're going to learn from Jesus, how do you know what to say when you don't know what to say? One of the things that Jesus did, just kind of tipping our hand a little bit, is Jesus would often ask questions in a space and let people begin to talk. We're going to talk more about that next week, but Jesus asked him the things that happened to Jesus. This is the response. The man from Nazareth, that's what we've been talking about. He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priest and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. That all happened 3 days ago. The word hope here is interesting, because hope can be such a transient thing. Have you ever been like, you know, one day, you start the day, it's bright blue, sunny outside, and just the world just feels like, you know, it's just going to be awesome. And then you get a phone call or a text or an email, and just everything starts to change just in a moment. Ever happened to you? And just hope shifts. You're full of hope, and all of a sudden you got no hope. It's weird. I sometimes think of hope like a window pane. Because when you look at a window pane, depending on where you stand and how you stare at it, you either see your reflection and things behind you, or you see through it to something in front of you. And here these guys are standing there. We had hope, but we feel like our hopes are lost. And all they can see are things in the window that are behind them. There's some of you maybe that are going through some stuff in life, and you're in kind of one of those transient moments. And it literally depends on how you look at the window pane today, because, look, I mean, think about it. Jesus, the Lord of the resurrection, is standing right there, and yet they cannot see. And sometimes what we're walking through feels so overwhelming, and hope feels lost. But Jesus, listen to me, Jesus is not far away from you. And every reason for you to hope is present with you. Verses 22 through 24, they detail the events of the resurrection they had heard about. Verse 25, then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe." Literally, your heart is slow to believe. All the prophets wrote in the scriptures, wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory? And then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all of the scriptures the things concerning himself. Because of the Old Testament prophecies of the Messiah had a lot of different expressions, things that would go all the way from a suffering servant to a victorious king. And so there were a lot of rabbis that taught, because there are so many different glimpses of Messiah, maybe there are multiple Messiahs. And yet Jesus took the time to tie in all of that detail, harmonize it, and demonstrate how one Messiah could unify all of that prophecy, especially if you knew that that Messiah was going to die for his people's sins and would be raised again. And so Jesus explained all of those things to them. Verse 28. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus in the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was just going to keep going. But they begged him, "Stay the night, since it's getting late." And so he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread, he blessed it, and then he broke it, and he gave it to them. And suddenly, their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. Now, this is the same tense, the passive tense, the divine passive. So God had kept them from seeing and understanding who Jesus is, but now that veil is lifted and they start connecting the dots, and they know that this is Jesus, now their Messiah, their Christ, their Lord. But then as soon as they recognize it, at that moment, he disappeared. How cool is that, right? Verse 32, then they said to each other, and here's the phrase I want us to see today, didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us? And within the hour, they were back on their way to Jerusalem, carrying the report that they had witnessed the risen Christ. Go back to that phrase. Didn't our hearts burn within us. Now, they didn't have non-kosher pizza the night before. This is not literally heartburn, all right? This is that inner person, that emotional, spiritual, that truest part of who they are just started to resonate. Something inside of them started to move. They could just sense and feel. They couldn't necessarily put their finger on it, but they just knew, they sensed something was different. I mean, who's talking? My heart's burning inside of me. I think all of us have had that moment somewhere in our life when you just, it's like the hairs on your arms stand up because you just got a sense, man, God's moving, God's speaking to me, God's revealing something to me. It burns within you. Jesus has the ability to connect with the heart, to speak to the heart. And we want to make a few observations of how he does that. And then I want to bring up on stage an example for you so that you can experience what it looks like when Jesus speaks to somebody's heart. All right? So if you're taking notes, here's a few things to take note of about how Jesus speaks to the heart. Number one, he makes things personal and understandable. Now notice when they were walking down the road, Jesus began to give them a window into Scripture. He starts speaking to them about the Scriptures, explaining to them what is meant in those texts. So whether Jesus is explaining Scripture or he's telling stories, he's just very thoughtful about his words, and he chooses them carefully so that they connect with people at a very deep level. Mark 4:34 says that, in fact, in Jesus' public ministry, he never taught without using parables. Stories that just connected with people on a very deep level. The scribes and the religious teachers of Jesus' day, the way that they would teach people is they would stand up in a very monotone voice. They would just recite, whether it was the text itself or what different rabbis had to say about the text, and it would just kind of drone on and on and on and on and on. Yet when Jesus spoke, he chose to communicate in ways that were understandable, relatable. They stuck out to the heart. Think about some of the stories that Jesus told. Now, we're separated from an agrarian kind of culture, and sometimes those examples don't necessarily mean to us maybe the same thing it would have meant to them. But when Jesus was gathered one day and he tells the people a story, hey, let me tell you a story. There was this shepherd, and this shepherd had 100 sheep, and one wandered off from the fold. And 99 were still present, and he secured the 99, but then he went after the one. The audience that Jesus was talking to would have gone, you know what? That happened to me like last week. And I went after my sheep. That's exactly what I did. I went after my sheep. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that's what God did for me? And it just landed in a place. I understand that. It relates to me. That's how Jesus would speak to the heart. Here's the second one. He made a point to be affirming. He made a point to be affirming. In the book of Revelation, Jesus dictates a series of letters to seven churches. And in just about every case, we can see Jesus measuring his words by first saying something that was affirming, and then he said something that was challenging. All right? So here's an example of that. In Revelation chapter 2, to the church at Thyatira, he says, I know all things you do. I've seen your love, your faith, your service, and your patient endurance. And I can see your constant improvement in all these things. But I have this complaint against you. Now notice the genius of that strategy. He didn't lead with his correction. Hey, I want to tell you about something. It's really on my nerves. Instead, he starts by affirming something in them. One of the ways that Jesus spoke to the heart is he was affirming. Here's a third way. He stayed focused on the main thing. He stayed focused on the main thing, the real core of the matter. There are several instances where there are antagonists who try to distract Jesus. Sometimes they try to trap Jesus, to try to get him to say something or do something that they think would make him look compromising to the people. And Jesus never swerved, and he never stepped in the trap. He just always stayed focused on the main thing. Think about whenever Jesus was quizzed about taxes. Hey, should we pay taxes to that immoral government of Rome? Do you know what they do with our money? Should we pay taxes? On the one hand, if Jesus were to say, no, yeah, they're corrupt and evil. Don't give them any money. That's treason. But on the other hand, if he were to say, yeah, I support the government, then it looks like he's in cahoots with an oppressive regime. So what does he do? Remember his answer? Here's the scripture. Well then, Jesus said, give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give to God what belongs to God. His reply completely amazed them. Now, why did it amaze them? Because Jesus didn't swerve. Jesus didn't step in the trap. He kept the main thing, the main thing. And the main thing was, let's talk about your heart. Your heart belonged to the Lord? Are you fully surrendered to the Lord? He just had a way of always bringing it back to the core thing. And that led him to speak to the heart. Here's the fourth, the final one. He elevated people with higher expectations. Speaking of the heart, he elevated people with higher expectations. He raised the bar in a way that caused people to feel inspired and motivated to reach higher. In John 8, there is the occasion where a woman is brought before Jesus who has been caught in adultery. And Jesus handled that delicate situation by calling out for anybody who's without sin, you go ahead and cast the first stone. Now notice that Jesus did not say she wasn't guilty. But if you're without sin, go ahead and cast the first stone. You know the rest of the story. They drop all the stones, they walk off, and then he looks at her and says, now, where is your accuser? Well, there's none. Neither do I condemn you. Now watch this. Watch how he elevated her. Now you go and sin no more. Lady, come on. You go and you live for the Lord. You live your life differently from this point forward. There was something in the gentleness of his response, the elevation of her words, which would have inclined her heart to want to live her life up where Jesus directed her to go. Come on, you go and live your life right. You walk with God now. Pharisees would raise the bar, but their goal in raising the bar was to get it so high you couldn't get over. It was a beat down. But Jesus raised the bar to inspire people and motivated to reach higher. Jesus just knew how to speak to the heart and make a meaningful connection. This past week, I met a young lady, and as she was sharing with me her story, I said, you know what? You are a living example of the way Jesus knows how to speak to a heart. And so I want to introduce you to Adriana Ward. Adriana, would you come and join me on stage? Let's welcome her on stage with me. And I've invited her to share some parts of her story. She was raised in a Muslim home, and she found herself really in a need of having her heart touched and loved in a way that you didn't even know what you were kind of looking for. So take us into your story. Kind of walk us forward how Jesus spoke to your heart.
So growing up, my parents got divorced at a really early age. And on my dad's side of the family, they were Muslim, so it was the only religion that I knew growing up. And my mom won custody of us children, but she was extremely abusive. And the older I got, the more I eventually became extremely depressed and suicidal. And in the midst of my depression, my father handed me a knife, and he told me to get it over with. And this is really when I started to cling to Allah and become more devout, because I knew that there was nothing that I could do that would ever make my parents happy. There was nothing that I could ever do that would be good enough. But in Islam, the more good that you do than bad, then you can work your way to salvation. So as the abuse got a lot worse, I eventually was too scared to go home, and I ran to the nearest payphone to call my dad. And even though he was bad, he was not as bad as my mom. And he had taken in my oldest brother, so I'd hoped that he would do the same for me. And so I called him, and I told him what was going on at home. And he told me, "I want nothing to do with you because you look too much like your mom." And that was really my breaking point.
That's hard to hear. And there are dads in the room with daughters, and that's hard to imagine, that you could hear words of, "I don't want to have anything to do with you. You look too much like your mom." That's unsettling, and it's hard, and it's difficult. It has to leave your heart in a place not only wounded, but just empty. Tell us about how you kind of started to try to fill that emptiness, and where Jesus comes into the picture.
So after my father said that to me, I just started to weep, and I begged Allah to help me out of it. And that right after that, Jesus came to me in a dream. And I was in a graveyard with a friend, and my friend walked off really quickly, and I got lost. And I was trying to find her, and I turned the corner, and I see Jesus standing there. And I just start to weep, and I fall down to the ground, and I start to worship him. And I remember waking up and being like, "Well, that's never going to happen. I'm Muslim." And God had different plans. So I started learning about Christianity in my world history class, and I knew that my math teacher was a believer. So I started to ask him questions, and he shared the gospel with me and invited me to church. And shortly after that, I gave my life to Christ.
Wow. Okay, if I heard you right, in a dream, Jesus came to you and showed you how much he loved you. He spoke to your heart in a dream. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Have any of you heard this before, like in the Middle East, like people that are Muslim are experiencing God in dreams? And Jesus is showing up to reveal himself. He's speaking to their heart. And that happened to you.
Yes.
That is incredible. And so now you've given your heart to Christ, you follow Jesus, and now you're on a mission to share Christ's love with Muslim families and the Muslim community here in the state of Texas, right?
Yes, sir.
So here's what we're going to do. Now we've kind of been in this pause. You know, like you're watching TV sometimes, it's like, you know, they break from this programming to give you this special message, all right? So that's what we've been doing. We're now going back into the message, all right? So if you're a note taker, here's what I want you to take note of. Here's some things that we can start to do where we can better speak to the heart, okay? So the first thing that we can do to better speak to the heart is speak to the main thing more, right? So because it's easy for us to get sidelined and sidetracked. What's the main thing, and how can I speak to the main thing more? Now, as you are out there sharing with the Muslim community, I can only imagine that there's a lot of opportunity to get distracted because of the news, people's opinions and commentaries. How do you stay focused on the main thing?
So recently there's a pastor who said, I pray that a Muslim never moves next door to me because they would probably be a terrorist. Our focus as the church has been on the wrong thing. We have been focusing on the fact that these people might be terrorists, that they're bad people, that they're murderers, and that they're worshiping this crazy, wicked, and dark God. But if that is the case, we should be weeping, and we should be sharing the gospel with them. That should be our focus. Our focus is to love them and to share with them the same love that has changed our lives.
I think about this principle, like as a parent, how easy it is, and this has been true for me way too much, where something that happens in my kid's life, and maybe it's just a blip on the radar, but I put way too much attention on that thing and not the main thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you're going to speak to the heart, you just got to constantly come back to focus. What's the main thing here? And you keep speaking into that main thing. And as your mission with, you know, families and the community of Muslims in Texas, is just kind of keep bringing them back to Christ's love for them. That's so important. Here's the second thing. So if you're taking notes, here's how we improve speaking to the heart. Is we have to sometimes serve the need before we speak. Serve the need before we speak. Think how many times you can think of Jesus healing first, speaking second. Feeding first, speaking second. It's almost like he had a strategy that he used a lot, like a serve first strategy. So as you are engaging Muslims in the state of Texas, talk to us about what you're doing that looks like that, a serve first kind of strategy.
So right now, more Muslims are coming to know the Lord than ever in history. And kind of like Chuck was saying, 85% of the Muslims who come to know the Lord are through dreams and visions. And 95% of the Muslims who come to know the Lord are because they know at least one believer. So it is our job as the church to step up and to love them. And a lot of them are coming from, they're refugees. They're coming from Iraq and Afghanistan. And they're coming to a completely foreign country where they don't know how to grocery shop. They don't know how to get to the doctor. They don't even know English. And so right now I work for a ministry called Crescent Project. And my job is to train and equip the church on how to evangelize to Muslims. And our goal is to reach Muslims for Christ and to love them in ways that they've never been loved before, because so many Muslims are coming to know the Lord simply because we're loving them. And they're saying, why do you love me this way? My own family doesn't love me this way. So right now we have the perfect opportunity to share the gospel with them.
We're in conversation about maybe this fall, her coming back and doing a little one-day seminar to teach us how to love Muslim people in our community. And so we can kind of look forward to that. But we want to thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing your testimony. We're so proud of you, and pray for you and your husband as God calls you forward in an incredible, bold mission. Come on, let's thank Adriana.
Thank you.
So before the fall, we can still speak to the heart. And you just got to ask yourself the question, who should I serve? Maybe somebody in your family that you need to serve first. Somebody at work you need to serve first. But figuring out ways to serve first will speak to the heart. It will open the heart. Here's the third, the final way for us to kind of focus our efforts to get better at talking to the heart today, and that is to choose our words more carefully. Choose our words more carefully. Jesus explained that he chose his words carefully. In Matthew 13:13, it says, that is why I use parables, for they look, but they don't really see. They hear, but they don't really listen or understand. Jesus chose his words carefully to speak to people. And today, one of the ways we can practice and walk in Jesus' steps and speak to the heart better is just choosing our words more carefully. Probably before this day is over, you're going to send a text to somebody. Maybe tomorrow you're going to send an email. Choose the words that you use to form those digital communications carefully. Sometimes there's an advantage to digital communication because there's a send button. And you can think before you send. But sometimes there's also a disadvantage with that kind of communication because you can't always represent kind of your countenance in your words. Have you ever sent a message or received a message and went, what? Because it just didn't fully communicate because you couldn't see that person eye to eye. We got to choose our words very carefully. Conversation. Let's choose our words carefully. We don't have a send button in a conversation. Don't have a backspace in conversation. Wish we did, right? Oh, I'd like to say that back. We don't have that. So we sometimes have to think ahead because we can't backspace. We got to think ahead. What are words that would be helpful? What are words that are not helpful? Anytime I'm going to anticipate my wife and I having a conversation, which might have, you know, like we're maybe not on the same page and it could maybe lead to a disagreement, I try to think ahead of time. How can we have this conversation in a way that my words can be careful and I won't use words that might misrepresent something? Like, for example, this is not a good, you always. Well, you never. That's not good words. So I got to choose my words carefully. Sometimes in advance, just deciding I'm not going to use those words. There's a great verse of scripture. It comes out of Psalms. It says, set a guard over my mouth, Lord. Keep watch over the door of my lips.